Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is the Coast to Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch. And today, we're going to talk NBA playoffs. And I also have Villanova assistant coach Mike Nardi. He also played for Villanova, the national champions. We're going to walk down memory lane. We're going to talk about the national championship game. I was actually in the hospital when that happened, so I never had a chance to break down that game. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But first, I have to talk about something that's not so fun. I got to talk about Jason Whitlock. I want to make sure this is the last time I talk about this clown and his fraudulent articles. He talked about Kobe's career as a fraud. Really? Guy played 20 years for one team, gave his heart to won 5 championships. There's one thing if he played 20 years, didn't win any, or maybe got lucky and got one. He won 5 championships in 10 years. He three-peated with a team with Shaq. Then he repeated. And he talked about selfishness. The last 2 years, no, actually all the years that they won the championship, he led his team in assists. Did you know that, you moron? I bet you he didn't know that. And he's a small – he's attacked a lot of athletes. There's one thing if you have constructive criticism, but he goes after athletes in the most nasty personal way. He's a small man. He's not really that small of a man. He's a big, big guy. I'm not going to be super nasty like I really want to. I really don't like him. It's been years coming, and I had to express that. I don't like this negative energy and going here, but I have to. Sometimes you have to have righteous indignation, and this is where I got to call this guy out. I want my audience to know, do not follow this guy. This guy is a fake journalist. He just looks for shock value. He's at Fox, ESPN, got rid of him. I don't think much of him. But when you go after a guy who gave his heart, and yeah, he scored 60 points and 50 shots. It was his last game. The Lakers are out of it. He wanted to go out with all his bullets, and he did. And he showed you why he was an assassin. And he's one of the greatest clutch players in history. And I got him in the top 10. I don't know if I have him in the top 5. I have to think about it, but he is that guy. Pay no attention to a non-journalist like Jason Whitlock. Now that I've got that out of my system, let's talk about some real good issues and some fun stuff like Golden State and Houston. I think the Rockets get one game with James Harden as points and assists. The Rockets have a lot of talent. They're not the sharpest tool in the shed. They're not the smartest team, but I mean, what if they wake up and decide they want to play their potential? That would be a problem for Golden State. Golden State was better off playing Utah, which had no experience there to sweep them. I think this is going to be 5 hard games. I could be wrong that Golden State kills them. I just think that Houston is going to decide to just go all out and play hard. They're just not smart enough to make this a 7-game series, but they're talented enough to make it 5. And I got my producer here, Corey Bullock, who's an expert on MMA, and he knows the NBA really good. We talk a lot. A lot of times he'll talk me out of different predictions. The Hawks and Celtics. I don't trust anything that comes out of Atlanta. I don't trust the Falcons. I don't trust their hockey team. I don't trust the Braves. And I definitely don't trust the Hawks. The Hawks go to the playoffs every year and underachieve. Or they lose. They're always somebody's patsy in the playoffs. They are 1-10 all time versus Boston. Now, they have more experience than Boston, and they're the number 2 defense in the NBA. So they could play defense in their home. The problem is half the joint is going to be rooting for the Celtics when you go to Atlanta. Everybody roots for the other team. It's going to be like a college atmosphere. You're going to have teams rooting, people root for the Hawks, and people root for the Celtics. The Teague Isaiah Thomas matchup is serious. Those are 2 of the better point guards in the league. They're going to go at it. That's almost an even matchup. So don't sleep on Teague. Isaiah Thomas is really good. Neither team has a superstar. They have really good players. Now, an X factor for Atlanta is Schroeder. He's a tough point guard to come off the bench. And I saw him play really good under pressure. Avery Bradley, Smart, Crowder. And even Evan Turner, I think that combination is too much for Atlanta. Unless Kyle Korver gets open and hits some threes, I like Boston to win that series. Toronto, Indiana, there's a lot of pressure on Toronto. They haven't won. They've had home court advantage, and they haven't won that first game. They need to get this first game. They're a good defensive team, too. But offensively, they play street ball with Kyle Lowry and DeMarco DeRozan just going one-on-one. Valanciunas is big because of his offensive rebounding. Now, the X factor here, I think, is Patrick Patterson. He's going to be the key because he's a stretch four that can shoot and do a lot of things. Now, you better pray. If you're a Toronto fan, you're Drake, you better get on your knees and pray that Paul George don't go off. He's the superstar in this series. He's the best player on the court. And if it's close, watch out, because he's one of those guys that could blow up a series, you know, and then Ty Lawson could come out there and play well. He's a nice guard. I got the Raptors in seven. They're going to sweat this out. OKC in Dallas. Serge Ibaka gives Dallas trouble. He averages almost 17 points a game against Dallas. He's that third guy. He doesn't show up as much in the San Antonio and Golden State, but against Dallas, he hurts them. I think that's going to be a key. Because Dallas has got a little talent. You know, they got some shooters. They got Dirk. Dirk's got to turn back the clock if they have any chance to win this series. Deron Williams, I do not trust. He has talent, but I have been highly critical of him in the past. I like OKC in six. I think Dallas is going to win some games. You know, now I get to the Miami Heat, who I picked of the East. Everybody else picked Cleveland. I'm going to wait till the following series before I make my finals prediction. But I will tell you about the Heat and the Hornets. They're a running team without Bosh. Now, that makes Dragic a lot better. You could tell he's got more energy. He's playing a lot better. I think for the first quarter, they're going to have to go out and get their running game going. They're going to run better at home. But then in the fourth quarter, you close it out with D-Wade and Joe Johnson. Now that they got that second closer, you can't focus on D-Wade. And Joe Johnson's playing his very best basketball. He's happy to be on the Heat. I like the Heat in five. The one problem I got with the Heat is they get a little sloppy on the road and it lasts like days ago. And one thing I need the Heat to do, and this is their way to beat Cleveland, they have to really give me a steady diet of Hassan Whiteside in the post, because that starts to open up everything else for Mick Roberts, who needs to shoot better, because that's going to open up his ability to pass the ball. And then I think the Heat have a chance to come out of the East. I said it. Now, this series with Portland and the Clippers. I thought long and hard about this, and I was really going to come on here and pick Portland to win. So I sat there and looked at this roster, and I said, Ron, don't be stupid. I do believe that the world will finally see Damian Lillard come. This is his coming out party. He's going to play great in this series. They're going to take the Clippers seven. The Clippers have too much talent with Crawford, Griffin back. DeAndre Jordan is a little too big. They don't have the bigs. I look at this roster and I see Ed Davis, Maurice Harkless, Gerald Henderson, Chris Kaman, Myers Leonard. You're not beating the Clippers with that. But because C.J. McCollum, who's a budding star, and Damian Lillard are one of their, I would say, the second best backcourt in the league. Maybe I can argue that. Because Beal and Wall took a step back, and you got Curry and Thompson who are at best. So I would say that they are the best backcourt. But that's not enough to beat the Clippers. And Chris Paul is Chris Paul. He really showed his leadership when Griffin stupidly punched one of the coaches or trainers on the Clippers. But he's back. And the Clippers want to get a shot at Golden State. They feel like they're talented enough and they're not scared of them. So the key is beating Portland. They're going to get by Portland, but there's a lot of pressure on the Clippers. And mentally, I want to see this first game to see if they're over that debacle and choke job they had against against the Houston Rockets last year, where they showed no mental toughness. And I just wonder, they're the Clippers. Something always goes wrong when we're dealing with the Clippers. And Doc Rivers has a lot, they have a lot of mental barriers to break through. The Clipper thing, first of all. Second of all, you have to get over last year. And third of all, DeAndre Jordan's free throw shooting and Griffin's free throw shooting. So now you have to do that. But you need Jamal Crawford, who I call AKA Rucker League. You're going to need his scoring badly. Okay, we have pleased to have Villanova assistant coach Mike Nardi on my show. Mike, congratulations on your national championship at Villanova.
Thanks a lot, Ron. Really appreciate you bringing me on the show again.
Oh, I definitely appreciate you coming on. I want to talk about the Seton Hall game. Was that really the best thing that ever happened to your team?
At that certain point in the season, I mean, I don't think anybody, especially at that time, the biggest game of our season with the Big East Championship on the line, anyone wants to lose that game, you know. And we don't look at it as a wake-up call, but I think that definitely gave our guys some motivation and a little bit more of an edge to them going into the tournament.
Okay, and now you make a run. You get past the first round, which everybody was critical of. You play Kansas in that regional final. That was one of the most rugged, hard-nosed, hard-fought games I've seen in a long time. You were on the bench, so you saw the game. Describe to my audience that game.
Yeah, so I mean, Kansas is obviously one of the best programs in the country and traditionally one of the hardest-playing teams. So we knew going into that game, it was going to be a tough game. You know, guys were going to be getting after it. And we just wanted to early in that game and really set the tone defensively and rebounding the basketball.
And you did. You did fantastic. Did you see the Oklahoma State game coming? You must have had some practice that week.
Yeah, that was an unreal game. Our guys just really – they came out very locked in and dialed into our game plan, and they just executed extremely well. And I mean, when you're shooting the ball that good, a lot of great things are going to happen.
Now, finally, you play UNC, and you're playing really great. Phil Booth is balling. Josh Hart is playing well. Josh Hart makes the free throw with about 5:30 left. You're up 10. Did it slowly creep in your head? I think we're going to win this championship before North Carolina made their run. Did you just for a second think about that?
Yeah, I mean, at that point in the game when, you're starting to get down to the wire and you could just tell we're starting to create a nice cushion there with a 10-point lead. We just said to ourselves, and what we say every game is we got to play 40 minutes because you never know what can happen. And especially with 5 minutes left, it's a lot of time for a team like that to bang a couple threes, turn you over a little bit, and then they're right back in the game. And we went cold there for a couple minutes, and there you have it. I mean, the game was tied with 5 seconds left. 4.7.
That's where I want to go. The game got tied at the last with Marcus Page hit that miraculous 3-point shot with 6 seconds left. Tell my audience the play that Jay Wright drew up for Chris Jenkins.
Right. So basically, I mean, at that point when Marcus Page hit that incredible shot, our guys just continued to play for 40 minutes. And we came back to the huddle and, something that we practice on every day in practice, we just wanted to put the ball in Arch's hands and have him make a play. And he made the right read because, usually with that time left, he's getting a shot there, but two guys came to play him and Chris was trailing the play wide open, made a great decision to just flip it back. And, as smart as Arch is, he really showed it in that when he did flip it back, he ran in front of those guys, kind of just set like a little brush screen without making contact. And a great, gave Chris a couple extra inches to get that shot off.
That was a great shot, and you won. Now, you know how great Jay Wright is, and I know how great a coach Jay Wright is, but does this elevate him in the public eye that he's up there with the Coach K's and Roy Williams now, that he's really one of the great coaches in the country?
Yeah, I mean, mostly everything is based on winning, and you have to prove yourself to people. And I think with this team, especially after the team that we had last year with an older group, having lost three key pieces to that team, Javon Pinkston, Darren Hilliard, and Dylan Ennis, to have a team that, you know, maybe in the beginning of the year wasn't as good as that team was, but just continue to get better each and every game throughout the year. And that's just a credit to Coach. You know, he's always on our guys. He's always coaching them, and he always wants them to get better. And that just showed throughout the year. And I just think it showed everyone else that, you know, he's up there with the rest of those guys. And, again, for him and for Villanova, it was just a great, great run, great season. But, you know, we're back at it again for next year, and he's not satisfied.
I like that mentality. Now, how is life as an assistant coach? You've been a player. Wait, before I get to that question, did this win over North Carolina make up for that really controversial loss that you guys had? Did that make up a little bit when you played?
I mean, honestly, no matter who we were playing in the national championship, it would have made up for it, you know. But being that it was Carolina, you know, a lot of people wanted to talk about the controversial call in 04-05. And, you know, we've had some great battles against North Carolina. The recent years have kind of gotten up. So I think for us to finally get over the hump and beat them, you know, in the most important game of the year, the national championship, you know, it really solidified us and gave us a lot of confidence that, you know, we can obviously, just beat great programs like that. And, but they were a great team, and they had a great season.
Definitely. Now, how's life as an assistant coach?
Life as an assistant coach it's a lot of fun. You know, I mean, having played for Coach Wright and, you know, and gone through this program, it's really exciting for me to be back, especially on campus, you know, and with the faculty that are still here. And we have a great group of guys. I really enjoy coaching them every day and just being around them and just kind of, you know, directing them and helping them with becoming men, you know, because that's what people did for me when I was here. And
that's awesome. Now, finally, I'm going to talk about the most courageous basketball effort and game I ever saw out of a player. Is when you were in high school and you basically played on one foot in a county championship game. You didn't win, but you lit up the other team and you played all out, basically on one foot. That was one of the best. I will take that to the grave, that effort that you had on one leg.
Yeah, that was the Union County tournament. That was my junior year. I was coming off a broken ankle. And it just so happened to be the first game back was against Elizabeth in their gym in the county championship at the Dunn Center. And unfortunately, we didn't get the win, but, you know, I played really well and just wanted to try and give everything back to my team for you know, playing so well while I was out, and we just couldn't get it done. But that'll definitely go down as one of my, you know, greatest performances of my career.
Good for you. And you know what? This championship you got is well-deserved. You are Magnardi, assistant coach of the national championship Villanova Wildcats. How does that sound?
Sounds big time, man. Hopefully, I can continue to stay here and we can continue to be successful and, you know, just get better each and every year.
Thank you very much, man. Take care.
All right, Ron. Thanks a lot.
That was Mike Nardi, and I'm telling you, I will never forget that. That was a high school game. You know, I don't really talk a lot of high school on a national show like this, but I'll never forget that. He shouldn't even have played, and he played in a losing effort. I think he had about almost 30 points, and he was going all out, and it was amazing. So that was good, and I'm happy for him, and good for Jay Wright. I would have liked to seen Roy Williams win because I like him, but I like Jay Wright too. So it's two teams I really liked, and it's good that Jay Wright gets that credit. because he doesn't get the Carl Townsends. He doesn't get the super recruits. He gets guys like Oshefu and Ryan and Archie and Hart and all those great players. So kudos to Villanova. Now we have another guest on. We have Andrew Flower of the Golden State writer for SB Nation, Dub Nation. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Ron, how you doing?
Now, what's the atmosphere out there? The fans, you're out in the area. How are they feeling about this playoff run here?
You know, there's a lot of excitement going on right now. You know, some people I've heard talking that the Warriors may dip off in their intensity heading into the playoffs, but I kind of see it as the complete opposite. I think this team is really focused, and they've kind of been waiting for this regular season to come to an end for a couple weeks now, and I think they're really, really excited to start playing some real meaningful games that will count towards this next championship.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steph Curry was in a slump, but he got in playoff mode against Memphis, where he hit 10 threes, and he's got 402 threes, which is ridiculous. That's a good sign, the way he shot the ball the other day.
Yeah, I mean, just watching some of the shots he took, he, you know, would dribble across half court maybe two times and then just pull it, and it was just, you know, all net. I mean, some of the threes that he took in that game was just unbelievable. It's a shame sometimes that they get such a big lead that he has to sit out the fourth quarter, because that single game record of 12 threes doesn't seem like it'll last long, but the way that they rest their players in the fourth quarter of games, it still has a chance. But I'm thinking at some point in his career that record will fall. But he'll definitely have to play in a close game and have a performance like he did the other night against Memphis. That was really incredible. You could tell that he just wanted to get that 400 threes out of the way early.
Every championship team has this guy. Like, I remember I'm an L.A. fan. We had Robert Horry. Guys that hit big shots to do little everything. I think Andre Iguodala is that guy. What do you think?
I think that's a great call, and it's impressive that they can bring him off the bench. I'm pretty sure Robert Horry came off the bench. But, I mean, you look back at games, you know, obviously going back to the finals, he came in and changed that whole series up by going small and starting him. But you even look back at games in this year, he had a huge, huge three against Brooklyn way early in the year to keep their opening streak alive.
I remember.
That's a game they should have lost. I mean, Robin Lopez missed a gimme tip-in at the buzzer. And if it wasn't for Iguodala's three, that would have been a really bad loss on their record. But, you know, it's one of those things. And even if he's not necessarily shooting the ball well for a stretch of games or even in that game, I think you can always count on him to have the confidence to take a big shot and make a big shot, which is huge for other players like Curry and Thompson. Can't just solely focus on those guys taking that shot. You have a lot of other players to worry about as well, especially Iguodala.
Now, Houston is an underachieving team. They have a lot of talent, but they're kind of underwhelming this year. But do you think out of nowhere they could just play to their potential and make it a real pain in the neck against Golden State with Harden and company, you know, and Josh Smith?
Yeah, Houston's frustrating. At the beginning of the season, I really thought they were going to have a really good year. I picked them to flirt with winning 60 games and making another Western Finals appearance. But, you know, it's hard to say. They're so inconsistent. They'll beat a team like Oklahoma City on the road, and then they'll come home and lose to a team like the Lakers. Like, you just – it's hard to put your finger on them. They definitely have the talent, too, and the veteran, you know, playoff experience. They have multiple guys who have won a championship, who've played in the finals before. But, I think the best they can do is possibly win a game and make the rest of the games close. But I think it really just comes down to how well Golden State plays their game. If they can play their game it doesn't even matter if James Harden's going for 35 and 10, because you have to have multiple players, especially for Houston, multiple role players who are also chipping in, you know, not turning the ball over. The Rockets play a similar style like the Warriors. They're just much less efficient than the Warriors are. So if they get caught up in that game, shooting a bunch of threes at a lower percentage, I can't see that really helping their case much. They have to really play some of their best games of the season to be able to win a couple games against the Warriors in this series.
Now, what do you think, finally, what do you think the key is for Golden State to get this done and get this championship and finish this 73-win season in the right way?
Well, going back, I mean, the Rockets, they have to have confidence that they can at least play with this team. They met them in the finals of the Western Conference last season. So I think it's really important that the Warriors just come out from the start, play their game. They're one of the best teams scoring in the first quarter. So if the Warriors can come out, you know, keep the Rockets at bay, really just play their game, get a nice sizable cushion, I think you'll start to see players like Dwight Howard kind of lose interest in a way. And like you saw last year in the finals,
yes,
he just kind of mentally checked out at a certain point. So I think if the Warriors can really just keep the pressure on them and not let them get a sense of feeling that they can compete and they can really steal a game here and there, then I think they'll be fine.
Thanks a lot, dude. You are one of my favorites. You represent the West Coast so good. Listen, next time we're going to do this again, man. A lot of fun.
Hey, thanks. I always appreciate you having me on.
Okay. That was my man, Andrew Floyd. I love his analogy because he's in the Golden State area. He's got it down. He's a great writer on SB Nation. It gives me good insights on Golden State. And I'm always fascinated to get West Coast writers on to understand the whole atmosphere of sport out there. It's been a great show. I'm going to try to get Kenny Anderson Monday. We've been texting each other to talk about the 90s, which I love that era.